This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Highway 12 starts in Corolla on North Carolina's northern Outer Banks and goes some 150 miles, giving drivers a view of some of the most beautiful scenery in the country. It heads south through Kitty Hawk, Kill Devil Hills, and Nag's Head, but then breaks free into the largely unspoiled Cape Hatteras National Seashore. From there, it arches over the Bonner Bridge onto Hatteras Island and heads towards small towns like Rodanthe, Avon, Buxton, Hatteras Village, and Frisco. Highway 12 is a lifeline for permanent residents of the Outer Banks and a busy boulevard for summertime commerce, not just the tourists, but the many businesses that cater to them. But the road is built on the ever-shifting sands of the barrier islands that make the Outer Banks, and that makes it highly vulnerable to storms, both big and small. And lately, those storms have punched new inlets and demolished the asphalt, leading to expensive fixes. So what should the future of Highway 12 be? Should the state and federal governments continue to spend tens of millions of dollars to keep it open, or are there alternatives? We want to get your thoughts on what to do with Highway 12, taking your phone calls today. If you're somebody who relies on it, if you're a vacationer or somebody interested in the way our state spends its money, give us a call at 877-962-9862, or you can send us an email at sot@wunc.org. We're going to talk about this today, Highway 12, with Alan Burris. He is a Dare County commissioner. He represents that part of the Outer Banks. He owns Burris Market, the oldest store on Hatteras Island. Alan, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here.
Also with us, Rob Young, director of the Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines at Western Carolina University and a professor of geology. Rob, welcome.
Thanks very much.
Alan, let me start with you. Highway 12 really became the road it is today in the 1960s. When the paving was completed and the Bonner Bridge was built. But your family's been running a store on Hatteras Island for 100 years, or at least 100 years before that. So I want you to give us a picture of what things were like on Hatteras before Highway 12.
Well, I just give you a quick history. Some of my grandparents are buried here with a headstone of 1725 and 1735. And I operate in a store that was started in 1866 by my great-great-grandfather and great-great-grandfather. And we have been here for quite a while, seen many a Northeaster. We have seen significant growth, there's no doubt about it, since the 60s. Most areas on the waterfront of America has. People have wanted to spend more time on the beaches. And with the help of the Park Service and the National Park, they put the National Park in here in the late 50s and early 60s. They needed different things around the park to make the park do better or do well. And they began a whole series of educating young people that were in the beginning coming in tents, and later as they got families came and stayed in motels, and later bought property and built sandboxes, and then from there they went to, as they matured and got a little older, they built bigger houses and they rented out. And so we have a area of about 5,000 houses now that are on Hatteras Island, with about 4,000 year-round residents, 4,800 somewhere along in there.
And about 50 years now, or for that long, Highway 12 has been in place. What are some of your memories of some of the larger storms and the way they've affected that road?
Well, I've been here through all of it. I've never left for a storm. Don't intend to now. I don't say everything I have is here, but most of what I've got is here. And in North Carolina, where are you going to go? And you know, some of you folks drowned Piedmont, at least through Tarboro and that area, and Floyd and some of those areas. So, and then Hugo goes in, and in Charlotte, you have lots of problems there. So wherever you're at, the storms offer significant problems, and there's no doubt on 12 we've had significant problems with the road at times. And we've had inlets, so we've had two. This is the third inlet we have here now in my lifetime that I remember. There was one outside of Buxton in the 60s and one outside of Hatteras Village about in 03, and then one we have now that's already filling in pretty much on its own. Looks like after the last Northeaster, you never understand nature but so much. It took from the S-curves and put it in the other inlet, and at the mouth of it's pretty well choked off, according to, well, I actually walked on it last week, so, you know, I couldn't quite get across it completely. There's a gully there of about 10 foot, where the water is about 2 foot in it, so I couldn't get across it dry footed anyway, but I could on the other.
Well, give us a sense of how people are coping out there, because I know.
Well, it's a difficult time. I mean, it's a different world than what I grew up in here. We were used to at times being without the bridge and stuff, but we would have, you know, days and weeks where you can't run ferries. So we had those type of problems, and any kind of weather of getting in and out of here, the bridge made it a whole lot more easier to get in and out of, and at that from that point on, it's been different, and we're used to being able to go back and forth. Our doctors and things like that tend to be on Nags Head Beach or in Norfolk or in Chapel Hill, or out according to what you have problems you have or what you do. And we go to games like everybody else. We got youngins in colleges and all those type of things, and so it's really inconvenient.
Right. Well, let me ask.
It's severe, but also it's the second year in a row, which is not something we've seen storms do very much to take us down in that realm. And most of our funds are extra funds we have are depleted pretty much from last year. And
right.
While I think most people had a good summer and were able to get out of a hole, you don't have a lot of funds to get you through the next
one.
We're worried about it, and we're concerned, and very concerned about people that live other places telling us what we need to do and how we need to do it and what goes down. But
well, let me ask
another thought process.
Well, I want to ask Rob Young at Western Carolina a little bit about the geology of the Outer Banks, specifically Hatteras Island. What's going on down there?
Well, you know, Hatteras Island is a very narrow, long barrier island shoreline. The geological evidence suggests that there are portions of that island that are going to have a very difficult time maintaining themselves over, you know, the next few decades as sea level continues to rise. There's quite a scientific consensus based on some excellent work that's being done at East Carolina University by the United States Geological Survey that shows that certain portions of that barrier island are, you know, in the process of, collapse, for lack of a better word, and that, you know, if we want to find a reliable way to get people down Hatteras Island towards Avon, Buxton, and Hatteras Village, I think that the problem is that the current Highway 12 corridor is not going to be the way to do that.
Is there a corridor along, because it's a pretty narrow passage we're talking about, is there a way to build a road, a place to build a road that wouldn't be as vulnerable, that wouldn't be subject to the same forces?
Well, you know, the North Carolina Department of Transportation had a plan that they were considering along with the Bonner Bridge replacement that would have taken Highway 12 on an elevated highway on the backside of the Outer Banks out in the Sound and then reconnected down the bank somewhat. And it was a fairly expensive plan, and there were some things that were complicated about it. But, you know, in light of the continued difficulties we're seeing with Highway 12, that original plan certainly seems like it's worth taking another look at. If we build the couple of bridges that folks are talking about building to span the breach that occurred during Irene and to span the S-curves in Merlo Beach, you know, we may be talking about spending another $450 million. And, you know, I'm not so much worried about the cost. If it would be a permanent fix, you know, what I'm concerned about is that we're going to spend the money and it's not going to solve Mr. Burris's problem. That's the concern that I have.
Well, what about that, Alan? I mean, the science suggests that it's just almost untenable.
There's a lot of opinions on science. Everybody's got an opinion like they have other things. But that talk about East Carolina University, where the lead professor there sells books on talking about how to save signs and how to do that, and is out on the speaker's tour and wants to use him as an example where he makes money off what he says and has very little science to back his opinions, is not the place to go. Now, actually, Mr. Rob is someone that we do consider a little more on the go about things. We feel like his science is pretty stable and pretty upfront. And he's right. The first thought process was to go on the backside of the island. It did, and the environmental groups moved us for 5 miles out, which significantly increased the cost. and also increase the other problems as well. You have problems with wind loads. You're building a two-lane bridge at 17 miles that goes into Rodanthe, which is where our problem is now. You had some other realms in it as well, and you're talking about $1 billion or thereabouts up front, which is difficult to come by. The state has worked on a plan that, in our opinion, is solid. It has done some historical research, and it looks at the fact that where the new inlet is now, there have been about four or five inlets in there in the last 110 years. It fill in themselves, comes and goes. There are break places for huge hurricanes that come up the Seine that tend to be inland of us a little bit and push a lot of water up the Seine when they come, not those that go offshore. They don't cause inlets traditionally. Isabel is one of the few that we can name in the last 70 years looking at records kept here by the National Weather Service and other realms that actually cut the storm itself from coming over.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break right here, Alan Burris, and we're going to come back and talk more about the science and the future of NC-12 and take your phone calls at 877-962-9862. You can send us an email at sot@wunc.org. What to do about Highway 12 on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. For more than 50 years, Highway 12 has linked the islands of the Outer Banks. It served as a lifeline for towns like Rodanthe, Hatteras Village, and Frisco. And in the summer months, more than 10,000 vehicles a day use that road. In just the last 2 years, Highway 12 has racked up more than $20 million in damage. So should more money be spent to keep the road open? Give us a call, 877-962-9862. You can send us an email at sot@wunc.org. We put the question to Alan Burris. He's a Dare County commissioner. He represents that part of the Outer Banks, and he owns Burris Market on Hatteras Island. Rob Young is with us as well. He's director of the Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines at Western Carolina University. He's a professor of geology. And Rob Young, before the break, Alan Burris was saying he didn't really like the science that suggests that building roads on there is a kind of an unsustainable project. Tell us more about the research that's been done and whether you trust it.
Well, Frank, I'm a little bit disappointed that Mr. Burris would disparage the credibility of a group of scientists at ECU that have worked so hard to develop an incredibly good understanding of the geology of eastern North Carolina. To suggest that the science that they're doing is somehow motivated by the royalties that one receives from a book that's published by the University of North Carolina Press is a little bit over the top. I mean, the royalties that one might get from a book like that wouldn't feed the smallest mouse in my house if they get any royalties at all. And Mr. Riggs does give quite a number of talks around the region, but he doesn't do it for money. And this is not the scientific understanding we have of the vulnerability of the Outer Banks does not come from profit motive. It comes from a desire to inform the public about the risks of living in what is a reasonably vulnerable area. And the best thing that we can do is learn from that science and continue to provide people access to the Outer Banks in a way that will preserve the coastal economy that everybody wants to preserve, but will, do so in a way that provides long-term solutions and not these Band-Aid fixes that we've been employing in our approach to managing Highway 12 for the last two decades. We're about to build a really nice, big, shiny, new, expensive bridge over Oregon Inlet. And again, let me say, it's not the cost that bothers me. The Outer Banks economy is an important part of the economy of the state of North Carolina, but we need to make wise decisions in how we, provide that visitor access that everybody wants to. And, I'm just afraid that based on our scientific understanding of the vulnerability of the Outer Banks that has been peer-reviewed and vetted by the larger scientific community, there were some excellent talks at the recent Geological Society of America meeting in Charlotte. I'm just afraid that the path we're going down is not going to provide that access that everyone would like to have.
You know, we've seen a lot of damage, substantial damage in the last 2 years. That's considered unusual, Rob. But I wonder, in light of what we know about climate change, will it be unusual? Is there anything about that that might be more regular, more normal, that kind of damage, one right after another, because of climate change?
Well, I think that there are a number of things going on. Climate change may certainly be playing a role, but you don't need to invoke a vision that includes sort of a catastrophic climate change scenarios to understand that the Hatteras Island portion of NC-12 is in big trouble. All the dunes that once protected that roadway have, over the last couple decades, disappeared. The barrier island is significantly narrower than it used to be. Even small storms cause overwash of the highway. Even when we're not forming breaches, we're out there getting sand off the road and, you know, trying to maintain that road in the given transportation corridor through a Fish and Wildlife, National Fish and Wildlife Service refuge and through a national park is environmentally damaging. And the fact that sea level continues to rise and will continue to rise in the future means that none of this is going to get any better. So we have these problems going on even without invoking some sort of a disaster scenario for climate change over the next century.
So
I appreciate him pointing out that you don't need to look at disaster over climate change. I think that's been done a lot, and also by some of his colleagues, not him particularly. And I said earlier that I respected him and his approach. But I also want to say, too, that part of what's taken place here over a number of years is we've been allowed to dredge and to keep dune lines up and work them. The federal government is one that's made a decision not to allow us to do either. And at the same time, the Army Corps has taken 20 years of sand out of Oregon Inlet, 5 to 10 miles offshore, and dumped it. That took it out of our system completely. So a lot of the problems we're dealing with, even if I give the inch that it is scientifically a continual problem, has been a problem that has been created by some of the things that we've done, that's been done in the environment itself. I think the people at Pea Island would rather have some dredging at this point and do take it occasionally when we can get it out of Oregon Inlet on the south side, and we can begin to do some projects. In the 70s and 80s, we had a lot of problem in Buxton. We were able to put a dredge system in there that worked. We put up a dune line that works. And then 40 years later, or 25, 30 years later at least, it's still working and working well. You come between Avon and what we call Little Kenny Keat, and between that and going towards the Salvo area, and we put a whole beach in there in the 1970s by pumping sand out of the sound that's very ecologically used today. It is in great shape all the way across, some of our best beach that we have available to the public at any realm at this time is there today.
Right,
and
well,
that was done in the 60s.
So there are other options, and we can talk about some of those, and I want to take a look at some of the other aspects of this. So joining us now is Derb Carter. He's an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. His firm is involved in a lawsuit over the rebuilding of the Bonner Bridge. It's a massive bridge that spans the Oregon Inlet and connects Hatteras Island to the mainland. Derb, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. Pleased to be here.
The Bonner Bridge, 5 decades old, needs to be replaced. Two options on the table. For many years, we've got a short bridge. Essentially, you can build the same kind of bridge right next to it, right? And that's currently there. Or you could build a long bridge that goes out into the Sound and it bypasses much of Pea Island National Wildlife Refuge. Now, you're taking the long bridge option, even though it's far more expensive. Why?
Well, I think it might be helpful to understand a little bit about the history of the project. The project began in 1993, nearly 20 years ago, with the purpose of providing access between Hatteras and Body Islands. That involved both navigating across the Oregon Inlet on a new bridge, but also this stretch of Highway 12 through Pea Island National Wildlife Refuge. So from the beginning, it was recognized that both of these problems had to be solved, a new bridge and navigating this stretch of Highway 12. The longer bridge is not our idea. I want to be clear about that. In 2003, DOT, North Carolina DOT, Federal Highways, and every one of the federal and state agencies that have a role in permitting this bridge decided to move forward the long bridge as the best alternative.
Do you have any record of that? I haven't been able to find any.
Yes, Alan, we have.
I've never seen any paperwork at all. I did see where it was talked about and suggested and looked at, but I've never saw anything where they actually made a decision.
Well, let's hear from Durb and see what he has to say about it. Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, we can provide that to you, Alan. But in 2003, the decision was made to move forward with the Long Bridge as the best alternative. That met local opposition. Local political leaders objected to the Long Bridge alternative. That resulted in then-Governor Easley directing DOT to actually halt work on the project and to develop an alternative that Dare County would support.
So what's better about the Long Bridge option? What does it do?
Well, the Long Bridge, as Dr. Young mentioned previously, would not only replace the Bonner Bridge, which needs to be replaced across Oregon Inlet, but it would go down the backside of northern end of Hatteras Island, avoiding not only the National Wildlife Refuge, but these areas that have been subject to constant overwash, erosion, new inlets being formed. And the concept from the beginning is replacing the bridge at its current location would not meet the objective of providing reliable transportation between the two islands, because if those areas overwashed or new inlets formed, you couldn't get to the bridge. And that, in fact, has been the case for 2 months last year, and it looks like at least 2 or 3 months this year until they find a temporary solution.
Well, let's go to the phones. Eric is on the line from the Outer Banks. Hello, Eric.
Hey there.
You got a question for us?
Not a question, just a comment. I want everybody to kind of focus on where we're having these issues with the road. It's pretty much mostly within the Pea Island National Wildlife Refuge. We had a breach in 99 from Hurricane Dennis between Avon and Buxton. The Park Service and the Corps of Engineers came in, dredged, replanted the dunes. We haven't had an issue since. Same thing with Irene between Frisco and Hatteras. We had a huge breach. They dredged it, built up the dunes, planted them, and have not had an issue since. But when you go up to Pea Island, they're not replenishing the dunes when they're breached. They basically leave a hole in a dune line after Irene, for example, and there's no effort to replenish the dune, to replant the dune, to stabilize that part of the island. And the reason is they don't want the road to go through the wildlife refuge. If they did, they would replenish the dunes, replant them, and stabilize the dune line. And that has never happened in the 20 years that I've lived here. They've never replenished a dune.
All right. Well,
that's why we're having these reoccurring issues. Mm. And it's only in that one section of the island. Everywhere else, the road and the dune is fine.
Well, thanks for the call, Eric. Let me put it to Rob Young. Is that and Alan talked about it a little bit earlier, too, that where this kind of thing takes place, where there's replenishment buildup, you don't have the problem. So more of that might solve some of the sustainability problems. Rob Young?
Well, there are a number of places along the Highway 12 corridor where there simply isn't room to build dunes anymore. The S-curves in Mirlo Beach are practically in the water, and in order to build dunes, you need to have a certain amount of beach between those dunes and the ocean to preserve the dunes. And the rate of shoreline erosion along much of that shoreline is such that pushing up dunes and trying to vegetate them, quite frankly, would, in certain areas, would just be a waste of time. And DOT, more than a decade ago, did spend a certain amount of time trying to rebuild the dunes, trying to bulldoze dunes back up between the road and the ocean. But we're in a new normal now, and that Highway 12 corridor is a lot closer to the Atlantic than it was 20 years ago. And so rebuilding dunes along that entire stretch to protect the road just isn't an option. It's not going to work.
Well, what
can I disagree?
Let me ask a little bit more about this bridge, because that, again, sort of reopens the question of whether a more sustainable route might be the way to go. Now, the North Carolina Department of Transportation has awarded the short bridge contractor at this point. So, but it's not under construction yet, right?
That's correct. It's not under construction because they have yet to secure some critical federal permits that would allow construction to begin.
Because you've got it in lawsuit. Let's be honest about it, Derb, if you're going to talk about it. The reason it's not got the permits is because they can't get permits because your group has us in a lawsuit about the corridor plan that you know, and you're using two groups, one out of the park side, the park area group, and you're using one of the other major environmental groups in the country to sustain you in this lawsuit.
All right, well, let's talk about the lawsuit, Derb.
Well, the lawsuit involves federal law. The reason federal law comes into play is hundreds of millions of federal dollars will be spent for this project. This is not a project that Dare County is going to pay for. It's going to be state funding. It's going to be a significant amount of federal funding. When federal funding is used for projects like this, there are certain laws that have to be complied with. That includes environmental review that requires that this project be considered a whole project, not just replacing the existing bridge and figuring out what to do with the rest of Highway 12 later. We've also got a significant federal property involved. This is a wildlife refuge. It was one of the first wildlife refuges. It was established in 1938, which was significantly before there was a Bonner Bridge or a Highway 12. And there are certain federal laws that require that activities such as this protect that refuge and the public investment that has been made. But think about the situation we're dealing with now. There's a proposal and a contract let to replace the existing Bonner Bridge. DOT is already talking about two more bridges at the two other areas, the inlet area near Merlo Beach and the inlet area, the New Inlet or the P Island Inlet, whatever you want to call it. So now we're already talking about three bridges. So the idea of one long bridge that could solve the whole problem becomes much more attractive. And we just don't understand why Dare County doesn't get serious about looking at a long-term solution that will provide reliable transportation that would have the buy-in of all the state and federal agencies required.
Well, Alan Burris, talk about that, because I don't hear anybody saying we want it to fall into the sea, but there are better ways, and they tend to be more expensive ways.
Well, I mean, what he's talking about is not feasible money-wise, and so they've effectively stalled everything, which they've done for quite a few years. You got to realize that this gentleman's not a stranger to us. He's sued us over everything in the world down here and tried everything, stopping our water, different things like that for years, all kinds of stuff. So he's not a stranger to what we look at. We're a little bit paranoid about him, no doubt about it. But to go back to what he's talking about it not being feasible, and Mr. Lowe as well, it looks to me like what the state is corridor plan has said, and it's been there for a few years now. And you got to realize, Derb himself said it's been since 1993 they've been studying this. Now, they've had a bridge across that inlet since 1960. It shouldn't take 25 years to get your studies together and stuff ready. They've got their studies together. They've put them together. Their idea of a cheaper, more reasonable way would be to come down and build small bridges over historical problems that we've had for years. If you go back in history and look at Vergazzo or you look at Lawson, you look at any of the map makers that made it come through here, you'll find the same particular areas or the same problems we had now we had then. Irregardless of the other problems with erosion, those are still the same problems. Where the new inlet is, they've had four or five inlets there, six maybe, since 1925. A small bridge that they're getting ready to put put in will take care of that whole area, and it'll be a bridge the same size as Oregon Inlet. So if a major inlet comes in there, you don't have any more problems with it. The same thing going into Rodanthe. That has not always been a problem area. We have a slough that's opened up in there that allows those waves to come straight in. But the same people that Mr. Durb works for most of the time will not allow us to put ships offshore or put an artificial reef in out there that would take the energy out of those waves, so that we've lost all that area there. That slough comes in right, so almost straight into the beach right there, and then makes a turn and goes towards the pier. It's well noted by the GS surveys and everything that's in that.
Well, I want to ask Rob Young, because you got about 30 seconds left, whether this is just a kind of an ebb and flow, or is there kind of a systematic disintegration of that part of the country, that part of the Outer Banks?
Well, you know, the science on this is pretty clear, that we're seeing unidirectional change on the Outer Banks, and we have been for several decades. You know, we can put a new short bridge over the new inlet and over Merlot Beach if we want to, but that's not going to stop the shoreline recession. So if we build that, then we're going to have to spend a huge amount of money renourishing the beaches out there so that the barrier island doesn't leave the bridges behind and let the bridges go to sea. I mean, if we want a long-term solution, I think that we really need to take a hard look at doing something else with that Highway 12 corridor, and I really think that that's what the science is telling us.
I'm going to thank all of you for being on the program. Rob Young, Director of the Program for Studies of Developed Shorelines at Western Carolina, Alan Burris, Dare County Commissioner, and Derb Carter, an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. Coming up, we remember the artist-activist Elizabeth Catlett. Stay tuned.